2 Corinthians 1, we'll begin with verse 8. For what do we want you to be ignorant? We do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a death, and does deliver us, in whom we trust that he will still deliver us. You also helping together in prayer for us, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the gift granted to us through many. You preachers and Sunday school teachers, how would you like to talk on this? That's what I thought when I first looked at it. But that's the great part about going through a passage consecutively and having passages assigned to you. You have to dig in and find out what's real there, what's really there. And I have got to get this. Sorry. Straight talk in troubled times. Now look, don't get uptight about this because I'm taking on both political parties when I do this. But during my lifetime, I have seen the offices of the presidency used to bug the opponent's headquarters to find out what their strategy was. And those famous words, "I am not a crook." I don't think that was straight talk. Secondly, I've seen the office of the presidency disgraced in a terrible way by a man that said, "I have not had sex with that woman." Now, we know those two things are not straight talk. The third one, the jury's still out on it. Our country, as I understand it, I've read this several places now, has taken on more debt in 4 months than we have from George Washington through George W. Bush. We need to pray for this country. We need to pray deeply that God would overcome our problems because we've got them. And solutions are trying to be made, and some of us think they're good, some of us think they're terrible. But God alone can intervene and bring us through these things. How refreshing it is. Oh, yeah, before I get to that, in every case, very eloquently, we've heard, in all three of these cases, we've very eloquently heard that we're not doing anything wrong. I mean, it's so wonderful that I almost believed in all three cases. And I hope the third one's right. I pray that the third one's right. But we know the first two were wrong. They had done something wrong. How refreshing it is to hear someone in 4 short verses come forward with some straight statements. Now, some of this book I don't understand. But this part of it I think I understand. And he talks to us in a very straightforward manner. And he tells us about his problems. And he spells out for us the solutions to those problems. Now, the first thing I want us to look at, I want us to one click, supposed to get me one, I think, but I got two. Anyway, right. Well, that took both of them out. There we go. Well, we'll stick with this, folks. Got a little technical defugulty here or something. I've got questioned the experience. That's the painful experience. That's the first thing I want us to look at. I'm not questioning it. It was painful. The reason I'm questioning it is that nobody knows what this experience was. Now, theologians have debated this. Theologians have discussed this. Theologians have all kind of theories and all kind of speculations of what this is. But they don't really know. And if you read them, you may lean toward one versus the other, but nobody can say for sure what these painful experiences were that Paul was describing. But we do know this, that whatever they were very intense. Look at what he says. Burdened beyond measure, beyond strength to endure. He wanted to die. Look, it's got to get tough to want to die. I never remember a time in my life when I wanted to die. Now, I've had some tough experiences. Stay around as long as I have, you'll have some tough experiences. But I've never wanted to die. But he even got to that point. And then beyond all of that, he had a death sentence on his head. Can you imagine testifying against a mafia and knowing that the Godfather, whoever it was, has put out a hit on you? Well, that's really what happened to him. It might not have been the mafia he was dealing with, but he had the sentence of death over his head. This is how tough it is. Now contrast this straight talk to you and me. I've had a terrible week at work. I come to church on Sunday and somebody shakes me and says, "How you doing, Henry?" What'd I say? Fine. I'm having trouble with my children. Somebody asks me, "How you doing?" Fine. That's not what Paul says. You know, I think our great admiration for George Mueller, he's one of the most wonderful men you'll ever read about. Get a biography on him if you've never read about him. What a great man. He never told anybody about his financial needs from all the, and I've read three or four biographies on him. And we all think we got to be George Mueller's. Well, I'm not sure that's right. Paul here tells them that, hey, I've had problems. It's been tough. I wanted to pass out this scene that got so bad. So he gives us some straight talk. Now, on this first point, I want to make a second point, and you're going to say that that's irrelevant, but I hope after you hear me out, you agree that it's not. Paul was against ignorance. He says, "I don't want you to be ignorant." Your version may say, "I don't want you to be unaware," or it may say, "I want you to be aware." It's all saying the same thing. Paul was against ignorance. How do I know that? He spent his lifetime teaching. He was a man that everywhere he went, he taught. He wanted to eradicate ignorance. He wanted to erase it every way he could find it. He was against it. We've been studying, and man, I've enjoyed it so much. His three missionary journeys in the adult Sunday school class. Some of you ladies have been in your class and haven't attended it, and those that have been with the praise team haven't attended it, but part of the church has, and it's really been great. He was a man that went on three long journeys for long periods of time with the great objective of teaching the gospel everywhere he went. To spreading the word that Christ died for our sins, was buried and raised again the third day according to the scriptures. That's what he gave his life to teaching. He was against ignorance. Teaching unto believers the gospel. Secondly, teaching believers how to live in the depth of the salvation which they had received. And Romans and Galatians are two classic books on that. Thirdly, revealing the mind of God to others. In 1 Corinthians, he reveals the mind of God concerning immorality, lawsuits between believers, marriage, divorce, the Lord's Supper, spiritual gifts, etc., etc., etc. He didn't want people to be ignorant. And every way he went, he did everything he could to see that people weren't ignorant, that people were aware, that they were informed about certain truths. And then, of course, in the passage we have, he was involved in informing others about his circumstances, there in verses 8, in the first part of verse 9. But I want you to think about something. This isn't some isolated incident where he's used this expression, and I'm just going to give you a few. But the use of the word ignorant, unaware, or aware, I looked them up, and they occur, of course, here in 2 Corinthians 1:8. But in Romans 11:25, In this passage, he talks about what God's doing in the world as a tree. And he says that, hey, Israel has been lopped off. They've been cut off by unbelief. But he said, one day, they're going to be grafted back in again. And he didn't want the Romans or us to be ignorant concerning that matter. In 1 Corinthians 10:1, he tells us that the rock in the wilderness, remember that rock when Israel was dying of thirst and they came to this rock and God said, if you'll strike the rock, water will come out of it? In 1 Corinthians 10:1, he doesn't want them to be ignorant of the fact that this rock was a type of Jesus Christ. He said, this rock was Christ. Thirdly, in 1 Thessalonians 4:13, he didn't want them to be ignorant concerning the second coming of Christ, concerning the rapture. He wanted the Thessalonians to be aware of that and us also. In Romans chapter 1, verse 13, he did not want them to be unaware of the fact that he had often wanted to visit Rome and had been hindered, been unable to do it. He wanted them to be aware of that. And then lastly, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 1, he didn't want the Corinthians to be ignorant of spiritual gifts. But let me tell you something, Christians. One of the most important things that you need to do in your Christian life is to find out what your Christian gift, what your spiritual gift is. It's one of the most soul emancipating things that can happen to you. Suddenly, you're able to say no to certain things in a Christian life. That's not your thing. And you don't feel guilty about it. When I first got saved, somebody could ask me to do anything. And I did it. I did it very poorly quite a few times. But gradually through the years, I learned what my spiritual gift was. And now I'm able to say, oh, I'd love to do that. Because I know that God's gifted me in a special way to do that in a meaningful manner. Other things I say, you know, look, if you can't get anybody else to do it, I'll do it. But look for somebody else. This isn't my thing. And so pray to God. Ask other Christians. Try some different things to try to discover what your spiritual gift is. Paul did not want the Corinthians or us to be ignorant concerning what our spiritual gift is. Are gifts, and some of us have multiple gifts. Okay, Paul reveals his painful experience to us. Number two, Paul understands God's purpose. An interesting story in one of Douglas MacArthur's autobiographies or notes was told when he was at West Point. A young cadet there, they were studying the relationship between time and space. And now, look, this is before the theory of relativity. So it wasn't much written about it, but about a paragraph, a good long paragraph. And he said he read that, and he didn't understand one word of what it was being said. He said, my goodness, what am I going to do? The colonel usually asks us every day to recite what we're supposed to study, and this is what we're supposed to study, and I'm one of the top students, and he's probably going to call on me. I better study. So what he do? He memorizes the whole paragraph. And so sure enough, he walks in, and the colonel says, MacArthur, said, how about the relationship between time and space? And so he quoted off the paragraph. When he finished, the professor said, Douglas, do you understand what you just said? He said, no, sir. The professor said, I don't either. And look, after the theory of relativity, I don't think anybody understood it but Einstein either, if he did. But, you know, there we find ourselves. And the point I'm making is that sometimes things happen in our lives and we don't understand why. We go to a Christian counselor, we go to a Christian psychiatrist, they ask us some questions. They might be able to give some helpful advice, but they don't understand it either. But you know, after we come through some of these trying circumstances, we can look back. I know I've been able to in my life and say that, hey, God was doing something there. Here's what he was trying to do in my life. It took me a long time. I'm kind of dense, but it took me a long time to figure it out. But I finally got to where I understood what he's trying to teach me, and then I tried to follow his will. This is the same person, the person that says he understands why he was going through this trouble in the latter part of verse 9. He's the same one that said, all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. In other words, there's a purpose in things that happen, all things. God has some purpose that he's trying to work out, and it's our job to find out what that purpose is. And sometimes we want to fight what's going on. That's my nature, to want to fight it. And that's not the way to do it. Say, God, what are you trying to tell me? Help me to learn it so I can get out of this. I don't want to be in this. Help me to get out of this. So Paul understood God's purpose in this tribulation. He learned, first of all, who not to trust. You know, that's always a good lesson to learn. He learned who not to trust, and who we don't trust is ourselves. Now, this is a good message for those with low self-esteem and also those who are very self-confident. You say, well, and look, I understand that somebody who's got low self-esteem doesn't have as big a problem with this as somebody who's self-confident. But I know some people in this church that claim to have low self-esteem, and I get mad at them because they got so much ability. It really bothers me. I say, you know, mad in a good way. I say, why in the world would somebody that's that able have low self-esteem? But then that person, you see them in the element, and then I really get mad. You say, hey, I got this problem at the house. And they come over. And what would have taken me 3 days, they do in 30 minutes. They know what they're doing. Totally confident. That they're no dilly-dallying around. You put this person in the element. And then they may be subject to trusting in themselves. But here's the self-confident person. I'm going to have to use a personal illustration here. I hate to do that, but I'll do it at the risk of being ridiculed, which I deserve. We're going on a trip. We're getting ready to take our boys, to our two grandsons, to Disney World. And so we're going on a trip. Well, I've already looked at the map and all that, and I know exactly how to get there. I know where we're going. And that's been true all of our lives, from our honeymoon on. And Gail can testify to this, which she never would. But here we start off on our honeymoon, and we're riding along, and everything's going great, and suddenly it's taking a little longer to get there than I thought it would. And Gail says, Henry, you think we're going? Oh, no, I know we're going the right way. Going another 30 minutes, we're still not there, and I'm starting to say, something may be wrong. Guess says, you know, I think we should have turned left. Oh, no. You know, I later find out that you need to listen to your wife when she understands directions better than you do. I'm so thankful today for these northeast, south, and west little things we had, the compass we have on our cars. It's so helpful to me, because if I want to go west, I can figure out how to go east better than anybody I've ever seen in my life. It's some kind of a problem I've got. But the self-confident person really needs to worry about this. Because our tendency is to say, hey, I can do this by myself, especially when I'm in my element. You get me in an area that I think I am strong in. I've gradually learned, I've been banned from all, in my house, all electrical work, and all, that's for my life safety. The other is plumbing work, which is for the safety of the house. I've been banned from those two things. And I agree, I shouldn't be there. You know, this is a case that I'm not too self-confident. But still driving, I think I can do it. And, you know, we'll probably get lost on the way to Orlando. But anyway, we need to worry about this. This is just an illustration of areas. And then Paul is making this point that we shouldn't trust ourselves. Secondly, he gives us the idea of who we should trust. And that person is none other than God himself. We should trust God. A very interesting story to me was told about a missionary who had gone into a very remote area. And his objective when he got there was to translate the Bible in these people's language. And he was working, first of all, on the Gospel of John. And he didn't get any farther than John 1:12. But to as many as believe him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe in his name. And they had a word for intellectual belief. This happened yesterday. They had a word for that. But he knew that that wouldn't do the trick. He had to get the idea of trust in there somehow. And this tribe was a group of cannibals. And they didn't trust anybody because they knew they may be next if somebody got too hungry. And so he didn't know how to translate the word. So he starts talking to his helper. And he sits down in a chair and he said, "What am I doing?" And his helper said, "You're sitting in a chair." He said, "Well, that ain't going to do it." And then he tries several other things, and what the helper's telling him just not going to do the word, get the idea of trust across. And then finally, he sits and rocks back in his chair and puts his feet up on the desk. And he said, "What am I doing now?" And the native gave a word that meant to put all your weight upon. To put all your weight. He said, "That's it." Time after time after time in the Gospel of John, when the word believe came up, he used that word to throw all your weight upon. Folks, that's how a person gets saved. It's not the intellectual belief that Jesus Christ lived. Anybody that believes history at all knows that he lived. That Jesus Christ died, anybody that believes history knows that. That Jesus Christ was raised from the dead, anybody that believes history knows that. More people observed and saw the resurrection of Jesus Christ than the assassination of Julius Caesar. Anybody that believes history believes that he was raised from the dead. You know how much I believe it? I believe it so much that I've rested my soul's eternal salvation upon it. That's how you get saved. That's exactly the way you go from an intellectual assent to a casting all your weight upon. Hey, if Jesus Christ isn't who he said he was and did what he said he did, and didn't make an intercession for me today, I'll never make it. I've cast all my weight upon him. And that's what you do. And then finally, we ask the question, why do we trust him? Why do we trust him? We trust him because he's able to bring life out of death. Look, Paul's been talking about death all through this passage. You know, he starts about it, despaired even of life, then in verse 8, had the sentence of death on ourselves, that delivered us from so great a death. Here's the person that can do it. Now, there are two kinds of deaths. Death, in its simplest, our simplest understanding of it, it means separation. When somebody dies, the body is separated from the soul. But then there's something the scriptures call the second death. And that's when the soul is separated from God forever. And those of us who have trusted Jesus Christ and say, "I've been delivered from that terrible, terrible death that's described to me here in this passage." Lord Kelvin, I think it was Lord Kelvin, was teaching a physics class one day. And it was during the spring, and it was a warm winter day. All you students, anybody that's ever been a student will identify with this. It was a warm spring day. The wind was gently blowing in. Right after lunch, here was a student there that had eaten a little bit too much for lunch. And as Lord Kelvin lectured, this started occurring. So when the guy finally got totally asleep, he called his name and he raised up blurry-eyed and he said, "What is gravity?" And the student thought real fast and he said, "You know," he said, "Professor," said, "I knew, but I've forgotten." And the professor said, "Students, that a great tragedy has occurred in the world today. We have in our midst the only man who knows what gravity is, and he forgot." You know, we need to understand things. Knowledge is great, but if we don't understand it, it's no good. You see, facts are dumb things. They're dumb. They're just facts. That's all they are. But if that fact has an effect on how I live or what I do or don't do, then it's a wonderful thing. We need to understand. Paul revealed his painful experience. Paul understands the purpose of this painful experience. And then Paul acknowledges, boy, something happened. This thing was perfect when I got it on my computer. Okay, I'm going to have to, talk about, that's the last point that's up there. Paul acknowledges God's deliverance. I apologize, folks. This has never happened before. I don't understand it. I think we had to transfer it to a different computer and something has happened. It's the reason I don't do it on my own computer. Something always happens between it. But anyway, Paul acknowledges God's deliverance. He says, "God will deliver me," there in verse 10. There's a past deliverance in 10a. There's a present deliverance in 10b. There's a future deliverance at the last part of the verse. We can trust him for the future. We can trust him for the past to deliver us. We can trust him for the present to deliver us. We can trust him for the future to deliver us. I'm reminded when we talk about deliverance, a story of this man that was a devout Christian. He really loved the Lord, but he was, I think, a little off in this area. He was visiting the Grand Canyon, and it's a great tendency there, and you got to be real careful about it. He got too close to the edge. And he fell over, and he grabbed this little pine tree. And there he was holding on for dear life. And he said, "Lord, Lord, help me." And this man came along, and he reached down, and he said, "Here, grab my hand." The guy's holding on with both hands. He said, "No." He said, "The Lord's going to deliver me." So the guy goes on. And about that time, the rescue squad comes and drops down one of these chain ladders. You know, one of these flexible chain ladders. He drops that down to him because he'd fallen a little farther now. You couldn't get him with your hand. This tree had bent a little more and come a little more up out of the ground. He dropped that down to him and said, "Just get on the ladder," said, "We'll pull you up." And the man said, "No," said, "the Lord's going to deliver me." And so then they fly in a helicopter. And they dropped down a rope ladder to him with a man there, and the man says, "Hey, get on." And the man said, "No," said, "the Lord's going to deliver me." Well, about that time, the helicopter swoops up and takes off, and this little pine tree breaks, and the guy falls to the bottom of Grand Canyon. He's dead. He gets to heaven, and he gets there, and he said, "Lord," said, "you really let me down. I was depending on you. You know I was depending on you." And the Lord said, "I sent a man, I sent a chain ladder, and I sent a helicopter to you. And you wouldn't take them. So what'd you expect me to do?" And, you know, that's where we find ourselves. The Lord delivers us through people. We're going to see a little more of that in the next point that we make. But God, many times God delivers us through people. I know the children in Israel, God would pull some great miracle. But that doesn't happen so much today. God delivers us through people. Look, I thank the Lord. I look at certain faces in this church of people through the years that have delivered me from anxiety, even depression, despondency, disappointment, just because they came along and helped me out. God used those people to help me. A poor woman asked the king of Spain to compensate her for a loss of property. The king would allow the whole country to come to him. So this lady came and said she'd lost his property. And, of course, he didn't want to hear this. He wasn't going to compensate her for the loss of property. So he starts arguing against her. And he said, how did you lose the property? And the woman said, well, I fell asleep and a thief came and stole it. He said, why did you fall asleep? And she said, I believe that you were awake and watching. He said, grant this lady her request. Look, we've got a God who doesn't slumber or sleep. You're not going to catch him when he's asleep. And he does deliver us in the past, the present, and the future. Now we're to our final point. Paul appreciates the Corinthians' believers' support. That's in verse 11. God delivers through people. I made that point earlier because he says, you, hey, you've done this for me. But see, Paul, and we need to do the same thing. Paul might look and say, you've delivered me. But he understood who was behind that deliverance, who was urging these people to help him in a certain area. Paul understood that. Paul also realized that people help by God delivers through people. That's the first point I'm making. I'm sorry. Gotten out of line here. Now, secondly, people help by praying. Look, missionaries tell us this all the time. Look, if you can help me financially, fine. But the thing I need most is prayer. And as we pray for people, we're helping them. We're helping them along. We don't know what their circumstances are at the time. And yet we're able to help them along. And then people help by giving. If we're able to give, we're able to help. And again, look who's behind this. Who put something in my heart to give to somebody? It's God. God, the Holy Spirit moves in my heart to give. God, the Holy Spirit moves me to pray for somebody. I don't know why I'm praying for them, but just suddenly they'll come to my mind and I'll lift them up in prayer. Paul appreciates the Corinthian believer's support, but he realizes he appreciates somebody beyond the Corinthian believers. And you know, we're all glad to know we appreciate it. You know, so is God. God's glad to know when he's appreciated too. How many times his heart must ache when he does something for us? And we go on our merry way. Man, I solved that problem. That was nothing. I took care of that. A man went to Japan one time, and while he was there, he was visiting some Japanese violin students. And he was talking to the teacher, and they were there from 4 years old on up to adults. And certain ones of them were learning certain things, and he was wondering what was going on. He asked the teacher about it. The teacher said, well, he said, before we let them pick up a violin, he said, the first thing we teach him is how to stand. Man said, that's interesting. He said, the very next thing we teach him is how to bow. And the man said, why is that? He says, no matter how good or how poor the performance is, when they bow, the audience invariably will clap and give them good applause. I don't care how good or how bad our performance is in this world, today or yesterday, when we bow down, God applauds. The very essence of the word worship is a falling down. Falling down. When we fall down before Him and praise Him and thank Him as the source of all good things, even though it might have come through a person, the source of all good things, He's happy and He applauds. I think a smile comes on His face. And so this morning we've looked at knowledge. But don't forget, get all the knowledge you can, but remember these facts are dumb things. You've got to have with that knowledge understanding. With all you're getting, get understanding. Get understanding. Very, very important. And then thirdly, we've looked at deliverance. God is able, and He does deliver us. He will deliver us. We can depend on Him to deliver us today, tomorrow, as He delivered us in the past. He's been so good. And then finally, we need to think about appreciation and make sure that we're appreciative to others, but more than that, to the God who's behind the action of others that helped us in a time of need. In Luke chapter 17, verse 11 through 17, it's a great passage. The story of Jesus as He was headed toward Jerusalem. And while He was, He passed through Samaria. And as He passed through there, He was walking along and came to a certain village. And as He walked along, these 10 lepers were there. And they cried out, oh, Lord, have mercy on us. We're in such a terrible condition. They, you know, they were in various stages of disease, but they realized that death was certain as this disease was eating away on them. They said, Lord, have mercy on us. The Lord told them what to do. They went and did it. And they were healed. Very shortly after that, we read that one of the lepers came back and fell on his face at his feet, at Jesus' feet, giving Him thanks. And then we have one of the great unanswered questions of the New Testament. Jesus said, were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Appreciation. To God be the glory for the things He's done. With His blood He saved me. With His power He's raised me. To God be the glory for the things He's